Julie, the cruise director. We're here to talk about secure wireless networking, primarily building secure 802.11 networks. How many people here have a deployed 802.11 network? That's good. Now, this doesn't count an airport in your kitchen. Hands? All right, that's more like it. How many people here use 802.1x? Like five? WEP. How many people here use WEP? About what we expected. All right, so background for those of you who don't have 802.11 networks deployed. Just going to go over a few basic wireless technologies. 802.11b I'm not going to go into in too much depth. We'll talk about it for the rest of the presentation. But our other common choices are 802.11a, which is just coming out, and 802.11g, which is the next protocol that will replace 802.11a. They're both, for most purposes, 100% equivalent to 802.11b. Louder? Louder? Do a sound guy who can turn this up, please? Thank you. Different mic?
Is it better?
Do you hear me? All right, much better. Thank you. Okay, so we have 802.11a, which is a 5 gigahertz variant of 802.11b. It's actually newer than 802.11b. Then we have 802.11g, which is the same performance as 802.11a, but in the 2.4 gigahertz band, and that's a bad idea for reasons we'll go into later. And then we have Bluetooth. Now, the only reason I put Bluetooth in here is people have asked me about Bluetooth. You know, what? How secure is Bluetooth? You know, can we put our LAN on Bluetooth? Bluetooth doesn't really do much. It's not useful for real networking. I mean, you can have a wireless earpiece for your cell phone. That's about it. So I'm not going to talk about that. No, seriously, how many people here have like a useful Bluetooth device? We have one hand. What is it, sir? No, no, what do you do with it, man? He says he has a compact flash radio. Okay, he says they're doing some kind of vaporware thing and it's not... Is it on the market? Oh, okay. All right, so we've got one. All right, so 802.11b. 802.11b is important because right now it's cheap, it's widely available, it's very, very well supported. You can find standards compliant hardware that will work with pretty much every platform you've got, and it's just generally useful. It's effectively, it's wireless Ethernet. If you do a raw frame dump, you're used to looking at 802.3 frame dumps, it'll look real familiar. But they push the signal out over a 2.4 gigahertz wireless signal. This is roughly the same frequency as your microwave oven, and it will cook you. Ken was talking a few minutes ago about a 1-watt amp. There were reports of headaches the night they did that. It's a bad idea. Casey's crazy. So, 2.4 gigahertz. You push, theoretically, 11 megabits. Now, Ken noted that you don't actually ever get 11 megabits. You get 5 if you're doing pretty well. And your signal drops off if you've got something annoying like a tree in the way. So really you can expect something about half of Ethernet speed. Why is that? Particle overhead.
Another issue is that when a packet is missed, it's retransmitted. There is some link layer retransmit strategies. So what ends up happening is if the connection isn't clear, packets need to go over multiple times. It basically reduces your total throughput. So basically you end up in a situation where the lower your signal strength, the lesser your bandwidth.
Also, it's not full duplex. So anybody here still have to administer a network with old coax Ethernet? Nobody. You're lucky. Well, it's coming back. Performance blows. 802.11a is fixing that just by providing, by brute force, higher bandwidth. And 802.11g is similar. They're both 54 megabit instead of 11. So you'll get maybe 20 megabits realistic performance. Now, the basic security that everybody hears about and you see on the box is WEP, Wireless Equivalent Privacy. It's basically RC4 rekeyed for every packet. And the idea is to be as secure as an Ethernet network. WEP comes in two variants, 64 and 128 bits. Pretty much everybody here probably uses 64. If you do use 128, there is, am I correct, no point? None at all?
As far as the WEP cracking, it doesn't matter really whether you use 64 or 128, given the way that most of the access points sequence their initialization vectors. Basically, theoretically, you should need a few more packets to break the 128, but in practice, it doesn't matter.
Well, hold on. Why would you know this?
I happen to be the author of AirSnort, which was not mentioned at this point, but...
Yeah. He's a cool guy. The last security measure we have is 802.1x. 802.1x is pretty common. Microsoft's deployed it. They did a pretty good job with that. 802.1x provides you with a number of features. First and foremost, you can... Can you hear me? Make you hear me? Okay. All right. You hear me now? All right. So 802.1x is useful because it lets you negotiate WEP per client. It also lets you rekey faster. It saves you against AirSnort, basically. If you rotate your key every 2 minutes, AirSnort will currently not be effective. Go into that a little bit more in a minute. So radio physics in 2 minutes. Who here is like a ham operator or has a lot of experience with wireless networking? Not too many people? About 10? Okay. Point one, RF signals behave like light. There are things that cast shadows. Things with water in them are high on the list. People, trees. Trees are the big annoying one. If you live in somewhere like Seattle, it's pretty green. But also, you know, buildings, concrete, steel, coated glass. And you see, you know, the green or blue colored office buildings, those also provide a pretty decent shield against the 2.4 gig signal. Signals also diminish rapidly over distance. That's sort of the quick 3D graph of signal strength over distance. As you get farther away, the signal drops off very, very rapidly, and then you run into problems with things like trees casting shadows. Yes, question. Units of distance. I made it generic. Yeah. Who here has paid attention in physics class? Wow. I'm surprised. Law of inverse squares. Sound familiar? That's what's responsible for this. That's all I graphed here. And then, as I said before, metal, stone, and water are the three classes of materials that you have to worry about. So skyscrapers, trees, pretty much anything concrete. You go into a tunnel, you lose signal. Hardware. We have a couple large classes of hardware. You have the access points. This is the infrastructure that most of you are probably deploying. The access points that we've been using for Seattle Wireless, which I forgot to mention I am somewhat involved with. We use RG1000s. They're about $60. Airports. You go to the higher end, you have the Aguirre or Lucent or whatever they're calling themselves these days. You have the AP1000, AP500, items in that product line. Those provide a bridge between your Ethernet network and your 802.11 network. You also have client devices. This is a Cisco AeroNet card, PCI, but most of the interfaces you'll see are PCMCIA interfaces and USB. Client devices come from Lucent or Aguirre, Cisco, Proxim. Those are probably the top three manufacturers. And of those three, they all use different chipsets. You have chipsets from Intersil, which makes the Prism chipset, popular because it will work with the HostAP code. I don't know. How many people are familiar with HostAP? Not too many. Go look it up. It's fun stuff. Cisco, of course, has their own chipset, which is not compatible with anything else. And then you have Aguirre, which has the Hermes chipset, which is what is emulated by the Prism 2. Then we have antennas and amps. These are the things that you attach to your radio to violate FCC regulations. You've got omnidirectional antennas and directional antennas. Those are the two larger classes for directionals, which are the most interesting for doing building-to-building stuff. you pretty much have, let's see, we've got dishes, which are, they typically will look like a big barbecue grill. I don't know if I have a picture later in this presentation. You also have a fishbone-looking thing, which we call a Yagi. And those are pretty much, what else? Oh, we have the Pringles cans. And contrary to what Ken says, they actually work pretty well. 14 dBi is reasonable. What else?
I think that's it.
Yeah, well, you're using the barbecue grill, right? Yeah, you can get for $60, where'd you get it? Hyperlink? $60 from Hyperlink, you can get a 24 dBi directional dish. So, what's that? He says old Primestar dishes work. Yeah, but you got to look around for those. These, you know, you pull out your credit card, bam, you got it the next day. So, yeah. Yeah, he's saying you can take them from your neighbors. Is that? Am I correct in saying that? Yeah, stand up, please. So we all know who's. No, the guy behind you who's... Oh, come on. We can bring it up on stage afterwards. Then you have question. What's a good Omni? You know, honestly, I don't use Omnis that much. We mostly use the rubber ducks that come attached to access points. Hyperlink does sell Omnis that look largely like PVC pipes attached to wire. Do you use it?
I've never used an Omni, so... Well, I've never used an Omni. So.
Yeah. Indoors, usually you end up having more problems with signal obstruction than anything else. So you just want to scatter more access points.
Yeah, in general, if you've got a direction, if you're doing an interbuilding link, if you have a directional aimed even at a really small, like, little rubber duck type Omni, you generally get fairly good signal strength. I know we're doing, like, about a half a mile build interbuilding link. With a directional and just the actual Omni that ships on the card, and we're getting really good signal strength. Like we can push 8 megabit over it, so it's pretty reasonable.
Is that 8 megabits real throughput? No, okay, didn't think so. And then amplifiers. Now amplifiers, I'm not going to go into too much. The reason being that if you want an amplifier to be truly useful, you have to have one on both ends of the connection. And if you have mobile clients, which is a typical scenario, you don't have an amplifier on both ends of the connection. Correction, if you have a 200 milliwatt prism card, it may be useful to put an amplifier on your access point. But typically, it's more expense than just scattering more access points, and you run into more problems with worrying about having personnel near the radios. 2.4 gig is not good stuff. You might as well, you know, open up your microwave and let it run. So, typical network topology. This is what most companies deploy in a highly simplified form. Who here has a network that looks substantially different? Yeah, they didn't think so. Now, typically, when people who don't think add wireless, they attach an access point to their client network and say, hey, we can plug all our laptops in with wireless cards and we're on our network. You can use your printers, you can use your file servers. It'll all work the same as if they were just Ethernet clients. Now, does anybody here see the obvious problem with this? Yeah, go ahead. Yeah, he says you don't have a perimeter, which is exactly the problem. Or you do have a perimeter, you just have a new perimeter for every access point. And most people don't put firewalls there if they're deploying like this. So what I usually recommend is you just treat it like it's another public network, roughly as hostile as the public internet. Which it is, unless you're at DEF CON, in which case it's worse. Although it doesn't work either. But separate IDS, separate firewall, and put all your access points outside of that. And with that, with the firewall, you want to add a VPN and not trust any of the underlying security built into 802.11. So, you know, use PPTP is probably the most popular with Windows clients, for only the reason that it's very easy to configure. IPsec is somewhat better as far as theoretical security, but who here has ever tried to do IPsec on mobile clients? A couple of people, pain in the ass? Horrible, he says. Yeah, it's been my experience. And PPTP is generally good enough. If PPTP is not strong enough to protect your data, you probably shouldn't be on wireless anyway. So, We have a couple types of intruders. You've got the unintentional intruder, which is a pretty new type with wireless. You've got the opportunist, and then you've got the targeted attacker. So, first off, the unintentional intruder. This guy has no clue what he's doing, but he's got his shiny new TieBook or, you know, laptop, his VAIO with Windows XP, and turns on his laptop. You know, maybe he's outside your office, he's near your house. And in this case, you know, Windows comes and says, hey, there's a wireless connection available. Okay. If you didn't turn on a WEP, they're on your network, they don't even have to try. Windows will prompt them for everything they need. And you may think, well, he doesn't know what he's doing, so how much damage can he do? I'll get into that in a moment, but it basically comes down to a liability issue. The other class of unintentional users is if you're in a big office building, you don't own the whole thing, you may have neighbors who pop onto your wireless network accidentally. I know people who do this, or I don't know people who do this. You probably don't want your neighbors, competitors, etc., logging onto your network for their internet access. And Windows XP and Mac OS X are the two systems shipping right now that make this the easiest. Then you have the opportunists, and I also don't know any of these people. They typically run a tool like NetStumbler, DStumbler. I don't know, is Hikari here? No, he's probably playing CTF. Good for him. Basically, these are tools. Who here is not familiar with NetStumbler? You're not familiar? You're not familiar. Okay, we've got two people. For these two people, NetStumbler is a Windows application. It works with an Orinoco card. And basically what it does is it lists all access points in your vicinity. So you pop in your card, you turn it on, you get a pretty little signal graph showing you the information you need to hunt down the access point. Opportunists have the same liability issues as the unintentional intruder, just more so. The unintentional intruder may pop in. Question? Correct. Okay. Somebody's pimping out Kismet. I'm sorry. Forgot to mention Kismet. His point was that an NetStumbler will only find access points that advertise themselves. Most access points do this by default. In fact, I think all do. But it is possible to turn off the beacon that advertises an access point. Now, what this means for legitimate users, they have to know your SSID, the network name, before they sign on. Because NetStumbler won't show. But Kismet, as he points out, will find those networks just by sniffing raw frames and looking for traffic sent to a wireless network. So anyway, liability issues. Your unintentional attacker, or unintentional intruder, what he'll be doing is maybe signs on to Napster. He's like, hey, you know, you guys have a T1. Great. Bye-bye bandwidth. I mean, it only takes one user. 802.11 is more than fast enough to saturate a T1. If you've got a T3, you probably have bigger problems when somebody's on your network like this. But there's a liability issue. If they download child pornography, pirated software, pirated movies, pirated music, especially with the recent legislation, you don't want that being traced back to your network and not have some kind of sacrificial lamb to offer up to the feds. And if some Joe random on the sidewalk signed onto your network, that's the problem you've got. Opportunist intruders will tend to come seek out your network explicitly to do these sorts of things. They'll have something that's, maybe they're not very technically savvy, but they'll have something a little bit sketchy, and they'll sign onto your network and use your bandwidth and your identification to use it, or to engage in these activities. You can also just, you know, run IRC bots and WAR servers off your net. I've seen this. It's pretty amusing, but obviously nobody here wants this on your network. But for those of you who are looking for new places to host stuff, there are a lot of companies that hand out routables. I probably shouldn't say this. I'm not going to name names, but walk around with NetStumbler, you'll find them. Okay, so you have your targeted intruders. These are the guys you really worry about. There aren't very many around. I've heard a number of security professionals making the point, privately of course, not in front of customers, that there is no such thing as a black hat. I would respectfully disagree. But your targeted intruder is your classic black hat. He knows who you are, he knows what you've got, and he's coming to take it. They'll typically have foreknowledge of your network, and when they've got whatever it is they want done, they'll leave, which makes them very hard to find. They won't keep going until they get caught. And for this reason, they're the hardest to detect of the three types of attackers. Your best solution here is to lock your network down as tight as you possibly can, and make sure you have full-time security professionals like most of yourselves. So, we have three classes of attacks that you'll see from these intruders. You have passive attacks, which I'll get into, wireless segment attacks, which are active attacks that are restricted to the 802.11 network, and you have a full compromise, which is somebody's compromised the previous two, and now they're walking up the line into your wired network. So, passive attack, cracking web. This is the most popular one. It's gotten the most publicity. AirSnort. A number of other tools do this as well. I won't list them all. They keep having new ones every couple months. Cracking web is pretty easy. Contrary to what a lot of people think, there's no CPU really involved. You can have an IPAC with the proper software and a wireless card, and you stick it in the bushes outside somebody's building. You come back a couple days later, you've got a web key. It's a passive attack. There's no way to detect it without physically controlling access to your premises. So you have a more than technical problem. The second problem is passive sniffers. If you do not use WEP or you let your WEP key stay static long enough for somebody to crack it, you'll have somebody recording all your traffic. This is pretty self-evident. Hooters had problems with their network traffic being taken off the wire. Not many. Who here would know? You must be paranoid. Right on. Okay, wireless segment attacks. Oh, this is we call these a barbecue grill. You've got a couple of these. You're using them for business too, right? Yeah. They're 24 dBi usually. Pretty nice, about $60. Get them in the mail, put them together in about 5 minutes.
I'm going to take over here because I've got some of these things are new, and so I'm just going to do this little section here. So basically, the wireless segments attacks that we have here, the first one is the direct client attacks. These are when you're on a network that doesn't have any security, maybe doesn't have WEP, whatever. This is basically the one that people consider us often, which is basically attacker comes on to your network, and instead of attacking your infrastructure, they just attack another client on it. Maybe it's some Windows box, it's got some open shares, it's got some problems like that. Basically, the clients in the wireless network may assume that the network they're on is going to be pretty safe from having any attackers on it, and if you don't have any higher levels of security on your network, that's not going to be true. Another wireless segment attack is the man-in-the-middle of attacks. There's a number of different types of these.
The first one is people putting up access points. If you've got a bunch of unclued users, and somebody else starts putting up access points near your facilities, chances are some of your users will end up on their access points. If they've got the same SSID, most people won't notice. And if they can route packets back into your network, which they can if your network's open, they can man-in-the-middle all connections. Most of you have probably played with man-in-the-middling SSL, SSH. Yes, how many people have man-in-the-middled one of those protocols? Was that? Oh, how many people are man-in-the-middling those protocols here at DEF CON right now? Oh, come on, admit it. I know you're out there. They're saying they can't get on the wireless to do it. That's true, unfortunately. So man-in-the-middles, the easy one is somebody gets an extra access point, tweaks a few settings, and puts it online near your users. Question. How close? As far as the signal will reach, usually a few hundred feet is the maximum range. If you're using special equipment. Oh, that's where I was going with that antenna. Okay, so you use one of those antennas, which you bought for $60, or a Pringles can, which you built for $7, most of it going to the can of Pringles. You can sit in a park a couple miles away, and you can pick up signal. They have a 2 or 3 degree beam width, so you can be pretty precise about picking out targets. In the middle.
And another point of the directional antennas is that they do also direct the signal that you transmit as well, so that you can do some man-in-the-middle attacks from a distance, because you can overpower a local Omni with a directional, even with a collard with a reasonable power level. And of course, then you can always get to the point of amplifying the collard and so on. So could someone theoretically do a rogue access point attack from across the street? Absolutely. Another man-in-the-middle of attack of relevance is, I'm sure some of you are probably aware of the ability of ARP spoofing, which is basically a layer 2 attack. It's a pretty nasty attack, and normally it can be done only on a given Ethernet segment, which is usually fairly well controlled because it's a wire that's in your building. Now at this point, when you've got a wireless network up, if you don't have a WEP or something on at the minimum, anyone can use these an ARP man-in-the-middle ARP spoofing techniques on any of the clients on your network. So basically, it opens up another dangerous possibility. I'm going on to the denial of service, unless you have any other man-in-the-middle stuff. Going on to denial of service, we discussed the rogue access points in the man-in-the-middle part, which is, a rogue access point is indirectly a man-in-the-middle attack of the sorts, maybe slightly different. Anyway, denial of service, basically, denial of service is more or less impossible to prevent completely in any wireless network using a frequency-based mechanism, because basically, worst-case scenario, now there's a lot of simpler ways to do denial of service. You can send a lot of packets, you can do, you know, things like that, but at the worst case, all you have to do is generate a lot of noise in the given frequency range in the local area. I mean, you know, if someone's got a leaky microwave and, you know, starts cooking a burrito, it'll take out any nearby wireless networks, and we've actually seen that happen in practice.
Oh, the other fun one is you get one of these dishes, and you get an old microwave, you take the microwave apart, take a cyclotron, attach it to the dish, point a target, turn it on, you'll cook the radio. And there's nothing you do to protect against this. I mean, sorry, IPF is not good enough.
Right. So, I mean, basically that's a fundamental limitation of all wireless networks. I mean, if DOS is absolutely not acceptable, then basically you can't use a wireless network, because they all can be DOS, and it's pretty much theoretically impossible to prevent that sort of attack. Now, we haven't discussed exactly what 802.1x does to a large degree, so let me give a little quick intro on it. Basically, 802.1x is a mechanism which allows client-based authentication on a wireless network. Well, actually, 802.1x is not specifically for wireless. The 802.1x standard was actually made for port-based authentication on Ethernet 802 equipment.
Why 802.1x is better? Because web, you have the same key.
Right. So one of the things about 802.1x, the advantages of it over just a straight up web, because basically is that it's actually a per user per port authentication. Now, in per port originally referred to a port on a switch or on a router, but in this case it refers to a MAC address of a machine. Now, the advantages, 802.1x can be used to negotiate a web key which is specific to that user. Now, with standard web, one of the problems with the security model of standard web is that there's a single web password that is used by the entire network. Basically, that's an incredible pain to administer if you've got any more than like 3 users, because what basically happens is, let's say you've got 50 users using the network and you've got static web. Now, one of the users you no longer want to have access. Maybe they're an employee and they no longer work for the company. Basically, every other one of your users has to switch to a new web key, because there's one key for the entire network. Now, 802.1x fixes that problem by it has the ability to dynamically create a session web key that is specific between that user and the access point. So if you've got multiple users, they each get their own web key. The web key is different from one session to another. You can have authentication take place at a fixed interval so that the web key changes from time to time. By changing the web key, you, of course, get rid of the passive attacks on the RC4 problems, which is what AirSnort and other tools similar to it exploit. So basically, 802.1x fixes most of those issues. Now, as far as attacks go, which is what we're really covering here, There is a number of attacks on 802.1x in relation to certain authentication mechanisms. Now, one of the things about 802.1x is that it supports EAP to do authentication, which is basically a general mechanism that allows you to use any number of different actual authentication mechanisms. You can use a clear text password, not a good idea. You can use MD5 passwords. You can use TTLS. Now, some of those mechanisms were designed for EAP over wired networks, and the security model doesn't work with the way 802.1x is designed, in that basically if you use certain types of EAP authentication, particularly the MD5 one, some other ones, basically everything except for TTLS for the most part, you'll end up having a problem in that once the user has authenticated onto the network, you can send the user a disassociate packet, kick them off, take their MAC address, and now you're talking on the network. Now, of course, by exchanging a web key, you alleviate that problem, but not all the 802.1x doesn't always distribute a web key. Only certain versions do, and so that's another thing that you need to make sure to do to prevent the attacks on 802.1x. But basically, 802.1x that doesn't distribute a web key and that uses a non-two-way authenticated authentication mechanism is attackable. There's a number of different protocol attacks. There's some timing attacks. Those have been overhyped a little bit because if you're using a good EAP and you're using a web session key, those attacks are removed. So,
One point I want to make is the one advantage of 802.1x is you can authenticate people as they sign onto your network. We do have a question. Yes. It's hard to track.
Cisco does currently.
All the big name vendors, they'll have two lines. They'll have, like, Apple has airport stuff. That's all consumer. But all the corporate lines, if you go to like a Lucent, you go for an AP line, they all support 802.1x. 802.1x support is actually very easy to add. You don't actually have to do most of the hard work on there on the access point. You let your upstream authentication server handle all the heavy work. So support list is pretty long, and interoperability is pretty good. Although, if you go with Cisco, go all Cisco, it'll make your headaches much fewer. But the point I wanted to make, when you deploy 802.1x, a good thing to do is to add another tunneling layer on top of that, because that way you prevent session hijacking. A large software company in Redmond does this, and I'm actually pretty impressed with their implementation. PPTP, 802.1x, all over Cisco gear, although word is they're dropping all that for a gear, so for what it's worth. But using something like PPTP, even though it's relatively weak, will protect your connections from hijacking.
Yeah. Another thing, so now, unless you have anything else on 802.1x, I'm going to go into the active web attacks. These active web attacks have been, there's a number of them, there's two that I'm going to discuss in particular. There's actually some documents published about these even before the original RC4 flaw that AirStart is based on. Now, the interesting thing is after all the RC4 flaw, they became kind of forgotten because they were the early version of attacks. They're harder to exploit because they require writing raw radio frames. Basically, just for those of you who are interested and don't know this, with 802.11b, there's actually another frame level. I mean, you've got your IP headers, and underneath that you've got your 802 headers or your standard sort of Ethernet header frame. But in the case of 802.1x, there's an additional radio level frame, which is specific to 802.11. I'm sorry, I said 1x. 802.11b. There's a radio level frame, which most of the cards by default won't give you. They'll give you the Ethernet level frame, and you don't see the radio frame. You can put certain cards into monitor mode, which is what tools like AirSnort or Kismet use, and you can read the radio frames. Now, I've been talking to a couple people about writing radio frames. I haven't done too much research into it. You can do some more into that, but basically, it's an issue which these active web attacks require, and I think that that's part of the reason that they've gotten a little less coverage. Now, as far as the actual attacks, basically, there's two really big ones that are relevant. The first attack is a known plain text attack. Basically, it involves a
a person off-site. I'm going to go kind of into a little bit of the technical detail of how the attacks work, but not too much, and then I'm going to explain how that affects everyone for the people who don't care about the technical detail. So first, a little quick technical detail. Now, the first attack is a known plain text attack. Basically, what you do is you're from another location on the internet. Now, we're going to assume for the time being that you've got an 802.11 network, which is connected to the internet, and that you can get packets to the 802.11 network from the internet to be transmitted. So maybe they've got a Class C and they've got the 802.11 on an internet routable Class C. If it's behind a NAT, there's some ways you can get around it. I'm not going to go into that. Basically, what you do is you, from an external location on the internet, you send a packet to the wireless network. Now, you send a known payload in some way that you can recognize your packet when it comes across encrypted. Good example might be choose an unusual size. Now, when you see that packet come across the network, and you have the known plain text, you can use the known plain text to generate basically what's called the cipher stream for a particular IV. Now, what that basically means is, once you've got that, you can then send packets to the network, even with a web encrypted network, even with 802.1x, and have your packets be accepted by the network. Basically, so if you can send a packet in from outside with a payload you know, you can basically, any point after that, send data on the 802.11 network and have it accepted, even if you're not authenticated. I mean, basically, this would allow you to send data from a wireless location without the permission of the people who use it. There's a separate attack, which is also an active attack, which you can use to listen to data on a web encrypted network. And basically what it involves is you listen for a packet, which is encrypted. You then make modifications to the encrypted packet, and then you make modifications to the checksum. So, I'm sorry, your question? Yes? The question was whether if the web key changes, is this attack still valid? If the web key changes, you do have to send a new packet from the internet and get a new known plain text, a new cipher stream. But basically, you can do it in one packet. So unless you're changing your web key insanely often, it's still a problem. If you're changing the web key every 20 minutes, then yes, every 20 minutes you have to perform the attack again. But basically, you can attack a network immediately. It doesn't take any packet collection, any air snort and tools like it take a long time to collect enough data to crack the web key. With this mechanism, basically, you can start right in sending packets on a web network without a lot of work at all. It's actually a pretty easy attack.
The bottom line is you can grab a packet off the network. First you inject one of your own packets into the network from outside. You pick that up encrypted. You flip some bits, you can drop it back on the network immediately.
Well, that was the second attack I'm talking about, actually, which is basically the way to listen to a network with web, because that lets you send on a network with web. The way you listen to a network with web is you receive an encrypted packet. Then you modify the encrypted packet without knowing what you're modifying. You basically do blind modification to the certain areas where you know protocol information is stored, like the to address of the IP. And if you happen to know where it was originally addressed to, you can modify it in such a way that it's now addressed to somewhere else. And then you can, because of the way the checksum is, modify the checksum so that the packet will be considered valid and retransmitted on the network. So basically what happens is you get an encrypted packet, you make some modifications to it so that it changes where it's destined to without necessarily being able to read the packet. Then you dump it back on the wireless network. It gets decrypted and sent to you somewhere over the internet. So that one's a little more complex of attack, but basically if you have a machine on the internet which you control, you can basically listen and read and write to a web encrypted network. Now, there's currently no tools that I'm aware of out there that do this, and I don't know of anyone who's actually actively working on them. And it's a fairly difficult problem due to the writing of the raw radio frames, but they are attacks that do exist. I suspect at some point someone will write the attacks. So most of the fixes to web that are based purely on rotating web keys will probably at some point become damaged. Yeah, question? How was that?
Guess.
No,
how would you, if you want to flip some bits to change the destination of a packet, how do you know? Well, if you know that they're NATed, it's usually pretty easy to guess IPs. And you can re-inject the same packet over and over and over again and just brute force it. And you only have to find the IPs once. And then once the WebKey changes, you don't have to redo.
Basically, if they have a Class C that's routable, you can look them up on the internet and find out what that Class C is and modify it to Class C that you control. If they like you said, if they're NATed, it's probably 192.168. Something.
.1.
Yeah, exactly. And so, basically, it's does require a little more manual labor, a little more sophisticated attacker than something like AirSmart that's just run and work. But
Blue Shirt, question. Yes, it has been for quite a while.
Right.
Now it's useful for exactly one thing, and that is preventing people from accidentally signing onto your network.
Yeah, and actually, WEP is valuable in the sense that it does reduce the random sort of wandering around, net stumbling, want to get on the net sort of people, and it makes it annoying for a sophisticated attacker. So, by all means, deploy WEP whenever you can. However, basically, currently, now there may be some extensions, say, to 2.1x or to WEP that will fix this problem as well. In fact, the IEEE is currently working on a new security standard, but they've been arguing over that for a long time, and they'll probably continue arguing over it for some time to come. Now, PPTP or a VPN sort of solution for wireless security will make this not an issue, because those basically assume that the network that you're going over is public, which so they're not harmed to this. Question? I saw someone with a hand up.
We had a question. Green shirt? Okay. All right, right on. What's up next? Okay. So somebody fully compromised your network. This is pretty simple stuff. If they own your wireless network, they own some of your clients, maybe steal your authentication information, then the next step is they need to compromise either your VPN box or your firewall upstream, assuming you have one. If you don't have one, this is non-issue. And then they start attacking your upstream hosts. This doesn't really merit much discussion. They can print to your printers, pull files off your file servers, attack anything they could attack if they're sitting at one of your desks. So, the big deal with this is if somebody's got a directional antenna and they're sitting off-site, but they can get themselves bridged onto your network, they can do a man-in-the-middle attack against one of your wired hosts talking to the internet or another wired host. That is, I can sit with a laptop a mile away and pretend to be your gateway and take all of your traffic. And that's bad, because then even if you've got a policy of not trusting your wireless hosts, I can steal every file that moves on and off of your file server, pretty much any other piece of data. Plus, I can do SSH and SSL man-in-the-middles. Who here has had a problem with SSL man-in-the-middles? Well, you seem to create problems, man. Yeah, you do. So, very few people. But it is an issue. If somebody goes to the trouble of compromising your network to that extent, they will get, yes. Keeping your network secure. Quick solutions, VPN, PPTP, and IPsec. Who here is not familiar with both of those? Good. All right. This is better. I gave this talk for a bunch of corporates and such, and 80% of the hands went up. Enable Mac filtering. Mac filtering is pretty weak. It's the sort of thing that somebody like Microsoft uses when they do a wireless product demo on stage, for future reference, next time they launch a new version of Windows. Check for rogue access points on a routine basis. There are tools to do this. NetStumbler is a good one. Just do a walk around of your area and make sure that you know every access point that's up and you control it. And also carefully monitor all your logs. Yes.
Oh, question.
Okay. The question, the question is, can you isolate the attacker and send them something like a virus? compromise Hotwell. Yeah, take over his AOL account. Yeah. Should I say anything here? I mean, really? You can kind of find them. I mean, the advantage of wireless is if you know what you're doing, you might be able to actually physically find them in meet space and beat them down. But other than that, no. I mean, it's just like somebody plugged into an open Ethernet jack on the side of your building. Good luck finding them. Find their computer on the network. You know what their IP address is. It's still IP. I mean, what are you going to do to them? You don't know? You can DOS them. I mean, great. DOS your own network. Secure wireless network. The wireless is another border, just like the internet. Do we have anything else we wanted to add, like big deal stuff?
Not that I can think of.
No? For more information, that's my email address and his email address, and a website that doesn't exist yet.
In a day or so, that will contain links to all the papers on that have come out, the RC4 problems, the other ones I was talking about, a bunch of other different attacks for people who want real deep technical info.
Still open to questions?
That site will be up just as soon as the wireless network here works. So, like, if one of you Red Badge guys can make sure the wireless network gets working again, maybe set up a little slightly protected network for people who actually... Okay, questions? Yes? Yes. You can transmit as far as you can receive. You get a directional antenna, you're in good shape. And Pringles can antennas take, like, an hour to build. So if you're really strapped for cash, you know... Questions? Yes? Sorry, I can't hear you.
Off-the-shelf hardware?
The question is, how secure are they? They're as secure as any of their other products. I believe FX actually gave a talk on attacking embedded devices. I actually missed it, but... usually they have pretty weak IP implementations if they have remote administration. You can do things like, who here remembers the Code Red versus Cisco 675 thing? A couple of you? Yeah, you can usually knock over hardware like that pretty easily, especially if it's from, like, Linksys.
So, what we got?
802.1 which? Vaporware Standard, one of them. There's many. More questions? Yes. It depends what you're looking for. If you're looking for easy stuff, you're better off with an Omni. Like, if you're in San Francisco for a meeting and you realize that you don't have a net connection, you don't want to pay, what are they called, T-Mobile now?
Yeah.
Whatever the fuck, it's Starbucks. You get out an Omni or just your card and walk around the streets and realize that there are, like, 3 billion open access points. But if you're actually, if you've got time and you're looking for more interesting stuff, like, in Seattle, you can go up on a hill, get a directional antenna, just start scanning downtown. Depends what you're up to. Yes, green shirt. What was that? AirSnort under BSD.
What's the question? Oh, is there AirSnort under BSD?
I believe there's another tool that under BSD.
Is your car here? I asked this before. No. Yes. No. There's. Yeah, it's part of BSD Air Tools,
right.
Along with Destumbler, et cetera, et cetera.
Guy in the back there.
You're gonna have to really scream because.
You're Gandhi, right? No, sorry. You're Joe. Okay, whatever. I was drunk.
Where's the next speaker?
The question is triangulation of physical location. It is possible to triangulate physical location with directionals. We've been kicking around a project just for fun of setting up a couple directionals, having them scan a couple different from a couple different locations downtown Seattle, and then put up access points in a three-dimensional map where they're located. Generally, any kind of triangulation thing is slow and fairly difficult. If you've got an attacker and you want to find out where the attacker is coming from, it's probably not going to be real easy. But if you've got some time, you can triangulate. Well, yeah, because of the fact that it's spectrum, and pointed out here, is that basically you can't. It's harder to pick up with any kind of standard sort of just pure radio equipment. You have to basically use an 802.11 equipment to even tell whether you've got a signal,
and
then you end up having to use the signal strength that that thing returns. Right.
No, no, you let the firmware do that for you, because a bunch of PhDs wrote that, and I mean, you can get signal strength off most cards, and it's usually good.
Yeah, basically you get signal strength from most of the existing cards. The current cards have a signal strength support, so you could just basically use the card. You could aim your directional around. And I'm not talking about the time-based triangulation. I'm talking about a directional antenna-based triangulation. Yes, that's true, yes.
Any other questions? Yes. About which? Right?
Oh, LEAP. LEAP is a Cisco standard, which is basically a WebKey rotation standard. It's reasonable. It's basically an earlier implementation that's similar to what 802.1x became. Again, there's those two attacks, which may eventually be real, that we would be susceptible to. Other than that, it's a pretty good standard. It's superior over straight WEP. Certainly, it's per user, you know, it's similar to 802.1x and what it's capable of.
You guys?
Yeah, okay. So, thank you, everybody. We will be reachable at, where are we going to be?
CTF
area, or the bar, or largest concentration of alcohol on the premises, like Caesar's Challenge tonight. So. Oh, and by the way.